This is the first of a series as we get into Chodesh Tammuz. Regarding the 3 weeks, regarding the Beis HaMikdash, perhaps we could talk about Beis HaKnesses, Kedushas Makom, and get a feel for what we're praying for. You know, what we're longing, what we're missing. So the mitzvah that I wanted to start with and focus on tonight is the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash. We're called upon to protect the Beis HaMikdash, to guard it, to safeguard it. What's the nature of that mitzvah? And I was able to, with the help of my son in Eretz Yisrael, I was able to collect a number of very important sources on this, especially in the Rambam.
One of the first mitzvah sases, like right the front.
Yeah, the Rambam has it as both a mitzvah say and a lo sase. And Rabosa, what I want you to focus on is the fact that in the Torah this mitzvah appears three different times. The first time, to my knowledge, that appears is in Perek Aleph of Sefer Bamidbar, which is the first source on your page. And there's a certain redundancy in the psukim there. The Torah almost repeats itself word for word within a very small, narrow context in which it talks about the Chanias HaLevim around the Mishkan. The pasuk says, Usviv la Mishkan Yachnu. And the Torah says it a second time, HaLevim Yachnu Sviv la Mishkan Aid. So twice within, a very small, limited area, the Torah repeats this concept of the Levim situated around the Mishkan. And to my knowledge, two of the greats of the last century address this repetition: the Brisker Rav on the one hand, and Rav Meir Simcha Mitvinsk on the other hand. And basically both of them are working within the context of the mitzvah of Shmiras Migdash. In the case of the Grizz's take on this parasha in Bamidbar Aleph, the first pasuk refers specifically to the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash. The second pasuk refers to the general mitzvah of setting up the machdos, Ishal Machneu v'Ishal Diglo, and therefore what this parasha comprises is a double mitzvah, a twofold mitzvah. Number one, to protect the Mishkan, and number two, to set up the machdos in such a way that will guarantee a certain system, a certain arrangement of how the Mishkan will travel and the people with it in the Midbar. Rav Meir Simcha takes us even a step further. I don't think he's aware of the Brisker Rav's insight, but he says that whereas the first pasuk tells you what we call the Machna Leviya, the second pasuk is referring to the Machna Yisrael. And what he means is that there are different dinim of Shiluach HaTomei Ben HaMachna. In other words, within the close proximity of the Mishkan, we have to get rid of even tmeim such as a balkeri. So there was no possibility of a husband and wife living together within that close proximity called Machna Leviya because of the problem of a tumas keri. Then there was a second circle, a circumference that was a little bit distant from the Mishkan, and that's called Machna Yisrael. There a tumi of the sort of, let's say, of a balkeri was allowed to be. So therefore the Torah wants to point out that the Leviim, although they were situated in close proximity to the Mishkan and they guarded and preserved the Mishkan, make sure that no Tommy would go there, they couldn't live there with their families. They couldn't set up their family life there because the family life had to be removed one step further from the Mishkan to the Machna Yisrael.
So you have two psukim about Levim, and one is where they live and one is where they can't live?
Correct. According to Meshech Chachma, one is where they were situated to protect the Mishkan, uh-huh, because the Tommy couldn't go there, and the other was in a broader circumference, which was further, more distant and far removed from the Mikdash and the Azorah, where a Tommy could be, a Balkeri could be, and that's where the Levim, although they didn't work there, but that's where they lived with their families. But just to sum up what I want to point out, and this is really what I don't want to dwell too much on this, because I just wanted to set up the first parasha of Shmiras HaMikdash is in Bamidbar Aleph. But that's not the most important parasha. The parasha that formulates the mitzvah most clearly, and the one that's brought down in the Monei HaMitzvahs, the Rambam quotes it both in the Mishneh Torah as the source for the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash, and he quotes it in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, is the end of Parshas Korach. And this is in Bamidbar Yud Zayin, and mostly in Bamidbar Yudches. And if you go through the Psukim, which was would be the fourth source on your page, on page one, you'll see many different dimensions to this mitzvah. But what's interesting is that although the mitzvah is primarily addresses itself to Shevet Levi, in other words, it's Shevet Levi that's called upon in the primary sense to guard the Mikdash, nevertheless, the Torah goes out of its way to say, Atah, this is in Pasuk Beis in Perek Yudches, Atah ubanecha itcha. In other words, the Kohanim also participate in this mitzvah. So again, try to keep this in mind, and we're going to come back to this later on, that the primary thrust of the mitzvah of Shmiras Migdash in Parshas Korach is the Levim, but nevertheless the Kohanim, call it as an addendum, as a secondary participant in this mitzvah, they too are commanded in this mitzvah. The key words in which the Torah formulates this mitzvah are at the end of Pasuk Dalid, where the Torah says, "Uvishamru es mishmeres oel moed." And that pasuk of vishamru, of guarding the oel moed, culminates with the words "Vizar lo yikarei velecha," which means that a zar is enjoined from entering into the mikdash, into the azara, and not only the zar, but also a tameh. In fact, the end of Perek Yud Zion of Bamidbar, which is the beginning of your fourth source, speaks about the fact that the people of Israel are worried after the debacle, the whole situation of Korach and when he was swallowed up and all that. They say, Ki Hakorev, Hakorev El Amigdash Hashem Yomus. If a person dies, then as his body carries tumah, has to be removed from the Mishkan, has to be removed from the Beis HaMikdash. Now, I wouldn't have even noticed the third parasha, which is in Bamidbar Perek Gimel, except for the fact that the Gemara in Masechta Tamid, do we have that in front of us? If somebody could just kindly open up to Masechta Tamid, just to save me the time, thank you. The Mishnah at the beginning of Tamid says, Bishlosha Mekomos HaKohanim Shomrim BeBeis HaMikdash. The Mishnah delineates the various positions and locations where the Kohanim was situated in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Beis HaMikdash. Now, please emphasize the Kohanim. As we said before, this mitzvah, Shmiras Mikdash, is primarily imposed upon whom? The Levim. The Kohanim, albeit, played a secondary role, but yet this Mishnah puts the Kohanim up front and delineates the places from which they would guard the Mikdash. Now what you have to know is that these three Makomos, where they were situated, were very close to the Azara. You could call them the Shari Azara, the entranceways into the Azara. And that's where the Mishnah says they would fulfill the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash. Now, before we go on, does anybody know which Masechta comes right in the on the feet of Masechta, right after Masechta Tamid? You guessed it, Masechta Midos. I'm just kidding. But the Mishnah at the beginning of Midos is identical to the Mishnah at the beginning of Tamid. V'shlosh makomos hakohanim shomrim beBeis HaMikdash. It goes to the same three places. That's pretty odd unto itself. It's not the only time in Shas that you'll see Mishnahs repeat themselves. But there is one important point that I want to make at the very beginning. The Mishnah at the beginning of Midos goes way beyond the discussion of the Kohanim. Valavim, and this you won't see in Masechta Tamid, Valavim v'esrim v'echad makom. The Levim already had a much more expansive Shmira that included not just the Azara, but the entire Har HaBayis. And the Mishnah delineates where these 21 locations were, where they were situated. So again, we have the Mishnah at the beginning of Tamid. It repeats itself at the beginning of Midos, but whereas the Mishnah in Tamid is limited to the Kohanim, the Mishnah in Midos begins with the Kohanim, repeats what we saw in Tamid, but then goes beyond that to include whom? The Levim. Now, let's go back to Tamid. The first Gemara in Masechta Tamid, Minani Mili. Minani Mili, what's the source in the Torah for the mitzvah Shmiras HaMikdash? Omar Abaye, the Omar Kra, and this is going to be the fifth source on your page, meaning Bamidbar Gimel, which is the sixth source on your page, the Gemara. Omar Kro, Vachonim lifnei Mishkan Kedmo, lifnei Olmoid Mizrocha, Moshe v'Aaron u'bonov, Shomrim, Mishmeres HaMikdosh, Livishmeres b'nei Yisrael. Notice, to whom is this mitzvah addressed? Look at those words, Moshe, Aaron, u'bonov. Well, who are the b'nei Aaron? Are they Kohanim or Levim? They're Kohanim. So, it's interesting. Two points that we have to make up front, and I think the Gaon in his pirush, in his beer on the Mishnayos noticed this, is number one, the Gemara completely sidesteps the pasuk and the parasha in Korach, which we'll see in all the Moni HaMitzvahs is the source for the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash, and instead substitutes the parasha in Bamidbar Gimel. That's point number one. That itself is a tzarach in Gadol. But moreover, the parsha which the Gemara at the beginning of Tamid implements or employs to establish the mitzvah of Migdash, or Shmiras Migdash, is a parsha that's addressed to the Kohanim. In essence, this Mishnah seems to be completely leaving out the Levim. Not that Rav Yehuda Rossi forgot about the Levim. Where does he remember about the Levim? Not in Masechta Tamid, but rather in Masechta Midos. And then the Mishnah continues and says, Halavim v'yesrim v'yechot, in 21 places. So it's fascinating that we can almost assume, again, this is a gigantic step on my part, you'll either have to accept it or reject it, that's up to you, you're the jury, that as far as Midos is concerned, had the Gemara asked the question, Minani Mili, in Masechta Midos, the answer would have been crystal clear. It's Parshas Korach, which is addressed to the Bnei Halavim. But we're learning Masechta Tamid. And Masechta Tamid is addressing itself to whom? To the Kohanim, the responsibilities of the Kohanim. And therefore, Minani Mili is not Parshas Korach, where the Kohanim are only secondary, but rather, in Bamidbar Perek Gimel, Vachonim Lifnei Mishkan Kedmo, etc., etc., Moshe, the Aaron, Ubon of these are the Kohanim, Shomrim, Mishmeres HaMikdash. So let us summarize a few questions. Number one, why does the Torah give us two parashias, and possibly even three parashias, but we're going to focus on two parashias of Shmiras HaMikdash. Point number two, is this mitzvah incumbent upon Levim or on Kohanim? And maybe that itself is the difference between one parasha and the other. Third question, why does the Gemara at the beginning of Tamid focus on one particular parasha, which doesn't seem at all to be the source, according to the Rishonim, for the mitzvah of Shmiras Migdash? Now, to drive home this point, that the Rishonim have a different source for...
What was your first question?
Oh, I don't remember anymore. Why are there two parashiyos? Why are there two mishnayos? Why the repetition? Why does one mishnah that in Tamid focus on the Kohanim and the other mishnah in Midos focus on the Levim? Why does the Gemara in Tamid completely circumvent the parasha in Korach, which is, the, as we'll soon see, the main parasha, the source for the mitzvah of Migdash? The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs, if you're counting up from the bottom, it's the third source up from the bottom of the page one, says, HaMitzvah Chof Beis, Hishet Sivanu, Lishmar HaMigdash. Now I underlined it, those three words, Shetzivanu, Lishmar HaMigdash, because I believe that the language of the Rambam and his meticulous care in writing and formulating the mitzvah in that way,
it's very general.
Very general, exactly, will be understood, I think, in the light of a different chiddush, also based on a Rambam, but not this Rambam, of the Brisker Rav, which you'll see on page 2. And that's going to be the third source in your page 2. Okay, that's just by way of introduction, but we're back on page 1. So you don't have to turn the page just yet. So again, what happens in the Rambam? Shetzivanu Lishmar HaMikdash. Very interesting. He doesn't even tell you exactly who's obligated in this mitzvah. Shetzivanu Lishmar HaMikdash. And then he says, V'loleches Svivo Tomid B'chol Laila. And then he says, look at this, L'gadlo L'chabdo L'romimo. Interesting. If I were to ask you, what is the purpose of the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash? What is the goal of that mitzvah? What would be your answer?
Protected from Tumah.
Oh, so you're right from the Chumash perspective. Because the Chumash in Parshas Korach is very, very clear that the purpose is to keep out the Tmeim, to keep out the Zorim. Those who aren't allowed to enter should be kept out. It's kind of like, if I can compare it to a security system, you know, if they don't let you go in, there's a reason why they don't let you in. But from the Rambam's perspective, the purpose of the mitzvah is legadlo, lechavdo, uleromemo. Now you might say, well, the Rambam is waxing dramatic over here, but I'll show you in a minute that the Rambam in Beis HaBechira, if you can open up to...
Walking around it all night is not exactly... It's not a good way to keep Tmeim out in the middle of the night, right?
The Mikdash was locked at night. Yeah, so what's going on over here? But let's hold off on that question. The Rambam writes in Perek Ches Milchus Beis HaBechira, you'll see it on your page. Shmiras HaMikdash Mitzvah Saseh. Says the Rambam, what's the point of Shmiras Mikdash? And I think, you know, we won't appreciate this Rambam if we haven't visited Buckingham Palace and seen the changing of the guard. And just by show of hands, how many people have been to Buckingham Palace? Well, maybe in Ottawa they have such a thing, I don't know.
Yeah, they do.
Okay. Listen to the way the Rambam describes it. He says, imagine this Shmiras Migdash going on. He says, Afal pi she'ein shom pachad me'oivim v'lo mi'listin, there's no security issue. She'ein shmiraso evel elekavod lo. You know, put that together with the Rambam here and say, for mitzvahs l'chavdo, l'gadlo l'chavdo l'romamo. And now the Rambam really waxes dramatic. He says, "Ein odome palter in sheyesh olav shomrim lepalter in shein olav shomrim." So, Rabosa, we have to understand what the Mikdash is all about. I mean, this itself is the Rambam is revealing a little bit of a tefach of what the Mikdash is about. This is the palter in shel melech, not just the melech. It's not a human king, and it's not just the malchei amlochim, the king of kings. It's the melech malchei amlochim. And you can't compare a palace that has shomrim going around it, guarding it, so to speak, with palter and chain of shomrim. But what does the Rambam seem to be totally oblivious of?
Tuma.
What about the Zar lo yumas? And then the Rambam goes on and he quotes the parsha in Korach, v'hu amro yisali Aaron, ata ubanecha itcha, lifnei ohel ha'edus. It's interesting. The Rambam, on the one hand, the Parshin Korach, no doubt, is the main source for this mitzvah. But on the other hand, he does quote that particular part of the Parsha, which mentions the Kohen. So that's a little bit complicated in and of itself. But where did the Rambam derive this idea of Palter and Shel Melech, Legadlo, Lefaro, that we have to elevate our, you know, the king's palace, and therefore we need this guard going around it. He gets it from a mechilta. By the way, I'm not sure if you'll find it in the mechilta. I tried to find it. I think it's in the Sifri Zuta, but wherever it is, the Rambam says, Visham Nemar, this is the last three lines in this paragraph from Sefer Mitzvahs. If we have more time, we'll go through the entire Rambam. But Gedola... Gedula l'migdash. There's greatness to the migdash. Why? Sheyesh olav shomrim. So how do we as human beings express our giving greatness to the migdash? By putting shomrim, appointing them to, so to speak, guard the migdash. As the Rambam says, not to guard it for security purposes. Lo dome palterin sheyesh olav shomrim, lo palterin sheneh olav shomrim. V'yaduashu palterin hu shem ahechol. That's the hechol is where the main the kodesh kadoshim and the kodesh is. V'amru ki me'agdolas ahechol v'romemuso sheyu shomrim misudarim olav. So how do we express the greatness of the migdash of the hechol is by appointing shomrim to guard the hechol. And then we have the Rambam with the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah quotes the Sifri Zuta in Parshas Korach. There's only one problem. And it's not just only, I mean it's a very, very serious issue. The Rambam quotes half of the Sifri Zuta and he doesn't quote the second half. It's the Ribono Shel Olam. The Sifri Zuta itself completes the paragraph by telling us that the goal of Shmiras Migdash, the obligation upon those who are Shomrim, is to keep out the Tmeim and keep out the Zarim. The Rambam is completely oblivious to that. He has left this out entirely. How could it be? True, the same source, the Sifri Zuta, which Rambam calls in the name of the Mechilta, mentions Palter and Shomela, and the Rambam codifies that. But that's not really what's up front here. I mean, that's a good drasha. But when we look at the parasha itself, as we pointed out before, the point of this parasha is Vizar lo yikar v'alechem, Vizar karv yumas, v'lo yum sugam heim. Over and over again, the Torah is outspoken about what the goal and the purpose of Shmiras HaMikdash is. So we can really add another dimension to our problems. Not only do we have this Kefal HaMishnayis and we have the Kefal HaParshiyas, we also have the Rambam quoting half of a source, leaving out the other half, putting the emphasis, as it were, on Palter and Shel Melech, leaving out the chunk and the central motif of Parshas Korach. So the Gemara in Talmud completely sideswipes Parshas Korach. It leaves it out. The Rambam has it in Sefer HaMitzvos, but what aspect of Parshas Korach does he emphasize? The Palter and Shel Melech, that's not even written in the Parsha itself. So please turn to page 2. Because you'll see the Bir Agra is going to point out something very, very important. And he says the following. There's one thing in Parshas Korach which is missing. And that is, how do we know that the mitzvah of Shmiras Migdash applies even when the Migdash is locked? You would have said, if you look at Parshas Korach, Hazari Karv Yumas, that if the Mikdash is locked, the gates are locked, it's nighttime and there's no access to the Mikdash, there's no need to fulfill the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash. Again, let's put it in our terms, this is not the Gaon's language, but if the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash has as its goal to prevent those who are unwanted from entering in, then at night, we locked it up, there's no problem. How do we know, though, says the Gaon, that the mitzvah of Shmiras Migdash applies even at night? Ah, says the Gaon, that we don't know from Parshas Korach, from Azari Yikar of Yumas, but rather we know it from Bamidbar Gimel. What happens in Bamidbar Gimel? There are three Kohanim. Says the Gaon, again, make sure that we understand that there are three Kohanim here. Let's go back to Bamidbar Gimel, right? It says Atah, it says Moshe, Aaron, Ubana. So the minimum is what? Is three. Says the Gaon, if you want to make sure that no one unwanted enters into the Migdash, Hazar Karv Yumas, then one Shomer is enough. Why is it that you need three Shomerim? So once again, we see that the mitzvah Shmiras Migdash goes beyond the issue of keeping out the Zarim. We saw it in the fact that at night there's a mitzvah of Shmira, even though the Mikdash is locked. Now we see it in the fact that one Shomer is not enough. We need three Shomerim. Says the Gaon, the reason why the Gemara in the beginning of Tamid Minonimili says Abaye, Hachonim Lefei Mishkan Kedma. And he quotes the Pasuk in Perigimel of Sefer Bamidbar, Moshe V'Yaron Ubanov. Why does he need that Pasuk? Why not the explicit Parash in Korach? Says the Gaon. Because if I had the Parash in Korach, how many Shomer minimum do I need to keep out the Zar? One and only one. But now that I have the Parasha of Bamidbar Gimel Moshe V'Aaron Ubanov, no less than three Shomerim will do. That's the minimum. Even though to prevent the Zarim from coming in, we don't need three Shomerim. But nevertheless, the Torah says Moshe V'Aaron Ubanov. And that parsha is Mechali, something that goes beyond the element. It doesn't exhaust itself in keeping out the Zarim. The Gaon is making a very fundamental point here. Because again, we always come back to our issue, why there are two parashas in the Torah. Why does Abai quote the less important parasha, the secondary parasha, to justify the Mishnah? The answer is, says the Gaon, this Mishnah is addressing the Kohanim. And the mitzvah of Shmiras Migdash on the Kohanim is a unique mitzvah that supersedes, or shall I say, extends beyond the confines of protecting the Migdash. the nafkamina is a twofold nafkamina, says the Gaon. Number one, you're going to need a minimum of how many? Three. One is not enough. Number two, you're going to have to do the shmir even at night when the mikdash is locked. Again, this doesn't justify why the Rambam, if we come back to that question, in Perek Ches Milchus is based on Bechira, completely omits, or shall I say, overlooks the element that's up front in Parashas Korach of keeping out the unwanted. Instead, he puts all the emphasis on Palter and Shomelech. But at least what the Gaon is giving us is an insight into why there are two Parashas. And perhaps what the Gaon is saying, if I can employ a little brisker terminology, is that there are two mitzvahs in Shmiras Mikdash. There are tzvei dinim, and there are two distinct goals to the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash. One goal is, we'll call it security against the unwanted. That's the Parashin Korach. That means to keep out the Zorim and the Tmeim. And number two, there's a whole other dimension to the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash. And that's written in a different parasha in the Torah. And the Gemara in Talmud is focused on that to derive the conclusion that even if, even where, there's no problem of Zorim, there's no problem of Tmeim, nevertheless there's a mitzvah Shmiras Mikdash. And that's going to generate a mitzvah Shmiras Mikdash that requires a minimum of three, and it's going to apply even at night. So I thought that maybe to analyze this, we should raise the kasha of the Mishnah Lamelach. This is a very famous Mishnah Lamelach. The one who really made this Mishnah Lamelach famous was the Minchas Chinuch. Oddly enough. Why? Because the Minchas Chinuch has a breakthrough kind of methodological distinction between two types of mitzvahs, which he employs to answer the Mishnah Lamelach's question. You may know that on these Mishnayos, on these Masechtas, we don't have Rashi. We have something called the Mefarish. Historically, it's not 100% clear who authored it. It's anonymous, but it's something that all the Rishonim take very, very seriously. So the Mefarish in Masechta Tamid, the Mishnah says in Masechta Tamid, let me see if I can find it here. Just give me a second here. So the Mishnah says in Tamid, Harovim Hayushomrim Baalios. Who are the Rovim? A very strange word. Harovim. And they participated in Shmiras HaMikdash. The Mefaresh, oh, I found it. It's right here in the front. That's why I didn't see it. So the Mefarish says, who are these Rovim? Rovim Kari Kohanim Shlohigiu Adayin Lasos Avoda. They're too young to do the Avoda. Kigon Pchusim Yud Gimel Shana. How does the Mefarish know that the word Rovim, the etymology of the word Rovim, refers to Ketanim? Kimo, he quotes a pasuk in Tanakh, Vayigdal Hanar. And the Targum says, Rova Ravaya. So the Mishnah Lamelach goes ballistic. How could it be that the Mishnah is allowing Ketanim to participate in Shmiras HaMikdash? We know that a Ketan is a Lav Bar Chiyuvaninu. So for example, if a Ketan does a mitzvah, it's not valid. Just like a Cheresh Veshota. That's a technicality. How could it be then that at least according to the Mefarish, the Ketanim participated in the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash? So the Mishnah Lamelach comes up with a fantastical answer to this question, which is not of any interest to me right now. The Minchas Chinuch has a breakthrough, and he wants to say there are two types of mitzvahs in the Torah. There are mitzvahs where the Maisa Mitzvah is itself the goal of the mitzvah. There are not other mitzvahs where the Maisa Mitzvah is just a means to an end, and everything is inherent in the repercussion, in the totzah, in the situation that results from the mice that you have to generate. And he claims that the paradigm of that would be achilas kodshim. With regard to kodshim, he says the mitzvah is not primarily the mice achila, and therefore the chovas gavra is secondary. What's the goal of the mitzvah is the fact that the kodshim is eaten. Right, it's a din in the kodshim itself that the kodshim should be eaten. That's called totzah samais. And therefore he says that justifies why Ketanim could eat Kodshim. Says the Mechaschinuch, the same thing applies to Shmiras Migdash. The mitzvah is not the actual Shmira, but rather the Migdash should be Shamur. It's the state of being that has to be achieved through the Shmira. And therefore Ketanim, according to this Mefaresh, are allowed. I would like to take a different approach, very similar to the Minchaskinah, but still different, and the Nafkamin is going to be our answer to the question of why the Rambam leaves out what we call the Iker, the primary goal of Shmiras Migdash. Here in Beis HaBachiri, he completely omits it. Now, if you've never heard anything from me, and you never will hear anything from me, I'd like you to hear this briskerov. And that's the one thing I'd like you to take with you from all the shiurim that we've had together. This is a beautiful briskerov, because not only is it gorgeous conceptually, but also in terms of teaching us how to be medayik in a Rambam, how to read a Rambam meticulously. He points out, in the name of Reb Chaim, that if you analyze the language of the Rambam in two places, you compare and contrast, you'll see a fundamental difference. What are the two cases that we want to compare? One is the mitzvah haktaras, haktores, and the other is all the other karbonas tzibur, like the tamid and the musafim and so forth. With regard to the mitzvah of kohanim, and again, it would be helpful if we had a Rambam sefer mitzvahs here, but we'll. Maybe I have it somewhere else on the pages here that I know I wanted to. I don't know if I got to do it. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvahs, in Mitzvahs Asei Chof Ches, if you could open it up, if you don't mind. Thank you so much. The Rambam says that the mitzvah of Haktores Haktores, Shetziva HaKohanim LaHaktir. Do you see that? The mitzvah is incumbent upon whom? The Kohanim. The Rambam says that right up front. However, if you look elsewhere, in the Karbanas HaTzibur, the Rambam doesn't mention Kohanim. For example, in Tmidim, that's mitzvah Lamed Tes. So he says, Shenitz Tavinu Lahakriv Bamigdash Shnei Kvasim V'chol Yom HaNikram Tmidim Shnayim Allah Layom Allah Samid.
Tavinu.
Yeah, and it's Tavinu. I mean, the Rambam is very careful about his language, and here in Ketores he says it's Tavla Kohanim. What's the difference between Ketores, where the Rambam says it's Tavla Kohanim, and Karban Tzibur, one example of which is the Karban Tamid, but there are many others. The Rambam says Nitz Tavinu. Says Reb Chaim, there's a fundamental difference, worlds apart. In Ketores, the mitzvah is incumbent upon whom? On the Kohanim. We'll call it their mitzvah of avoda. It's their avoda. They're obligated to do the avoda. In the other cases of Karbonas Tzibur, says Reb Chaim, the mitzvah is not a personal mitzvah on the Kohanim. The mitzvah is incumbent upon whom? Klal Yisrael, the entire Tzibur of Klal Yisrael. The Asiyah was given over to the Kohanim, because in actuality, only the Kohanim, could implement the Avoda, because the Avoda in the Zahar is Psula. But don't understand that the Kohanim are representing themselves to fulfill their own personal obligation, says Reb Chaim, but rather, they are representing the Tzibur to fulfill the mitzvah that's incumbent upon the entire Tzibur, and to create the Kapara, and achieve the Kapara on behalf of the entire Tzibur. So again, whereas Ketores is incumbent upon the Kohanim, and the mitzvah really exhausts itself in the Kohanim implementing the Ketores, in the case of Karbanas Tzibur, the mitzvah that has to be achieved is on behalf of the Tzibur to create a ritzui or a kapara on behalf of the entire Tzibur. The Kohanim are only representing the arm of the Tzibur. And Reb Chaim says that that's why the Mishnah at the beginning of Zvachim says, Kol HaZvachim SheNishbichu Shalo Lishman Ksherim V'lo Olu L'Shem Chova. So Chaim says, how can you have both at the same time? On the one hand, you're saying it's kosher. No, if it's kosher, then you were Yotzi Yechova. What's Lo Olu L'Shem Chova?
This is the first mission in
Zvachim, right? So Rav Chaim says that such a thing, those two dimensions of on the one hand, is it kosher, is it not, on the other, you yotze, you bechov or not, would be unthinkable with regard to the Ketores. Because with regard to the Ketores, it's one question only. Did the Kohanim create a Ketores that's kosher? And if they did, it's for sure they were yotze l'shem chova. You wouldn't be able to say, well, no, it's kosher, but ain't any yotze l'chova. But with regard to a carbon tzibur, there you could differentiate. You could say, well, maybe the carbon is kosher as a carbon, in cheft it's a carbon, but the ritzui, the goal of the mitzvah, which is to create a kapar on behalf of Klal Yisrael, that wasn't achieved. That separation exists. In the light of this chiddush of Reb Chaim,
that implies to a carbon yachid also, right? I mean,
it could apply even to a carbon yachid. But in the light of this distinction, let's ask ourselves, what language does the Rambam employ with regard to the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash? Turn back, if you will, to page 1. Shetzivanu Lishmar HaMikdash. He doesn't point his finger at the Kohanim and not even at the Levium, but rather, Sivanu, like Nitztavinu in the case of a Karban Tzibur. The paradigm for Shmiras Mikdash is not Ktores, it's not what we call a mitzvah avoda, but rather, it's the Karban Tzibur. The entire Tzibur of Klal Yisrael are enjoined to bring the Mikdash, so to speak, to a higher level of Kavod and Gedula. The Kohanim may implement that mitzvah, but they're only doing so as representatives of all of Klal Yisrael. I find this fascinating, because does anybody know what the subject of Perek Zayin of Hilchos Beis HaBechira is? The one right before Perek Ches of Shmiras Mikdash? Mitzvah Saseh Lira Min HaMikdash. This is the mitzvah of Mora Mikdash. I mean, we would have, in order to understand what a Beis HaKnesses is all about, we would have to go carefully through Perek Zayin. Because our Beis Knesses is sort of a duplicate of a base HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. And we have a mitzvah Mora Mikdash. Tili Tilim Shalach is here. All the things that you're not allowed to do in the base HaMikdash because of Mora Mikdash. Ah, now we turn to Perek Ches. Just like we have the mitzvah Mora Mikdash, says the Ram, we have another mitzvah.
Shmiras
HaMikdash. Shmiras HaMikdash is itself a reflection or an extension of and belongs, should be conjoined with, I would say, the mitzvah of Mora Mikdash. Just as Mora Mikdash generates a whole list of Isurim and how we have to treat the Mikdash with reverence, so too Shmiras Mikdash is another way, perhaps a positive way, of expressing that reverence that we have for the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Rambam, Ein adome paltarin sheyesh alav shomrim lepaltarin sheyein alav shomrim. This is the changing of the guard. This is what they call in modern Hebrew Mishmar HaKavod. This is the guard of honor.
Honor guard.
What's it called?
The honor guard.
The honor guard. Okay, I'm sorry. I said it wrong. The honor guard. I didn't know how to translate it properly. Thank you. The honor guard. This is an honor guard. You know, I when I was at Buckingham Palace, it was interesting. I don't know how I looked out or didn't look out, but the moment that I watched the changing of the guard, guess who was standing next to me? A policeman. Have you seen the British police? You know, they have this very interesting uniform, the hat that they wear. And although at the time it didn't occur to me to say lumbus, but the truth is that there's a fundamental difference between the guards that were standing in front of the palace and the policeman who was standing next to me. The guards...
Not functional.
The guards were there for what? Not functional, not for security reasons. They didn't care to check your credentials and see if you belong there. Maybe you're an alien or a threat to the state or something like that. They were there even if the policeman had done his duty, and even if the policeman had absolutely determined and certainly convinced himself that there was no one unwanted who shouldn't have been there. You know, no one has any firearms on them. But nevertheless, there would still be a changing of the guard. Because those guys, and we tried to get them to smile, we couldn't do it, but those guys who were changing the guard, they were there not for a functional, pragmatic purpose, not to achieve the goal of making sure that no one entertained. And that's what the Rambam goes out of his way. He says, "Afal pi she'ein shom pachad me'oivim v'lo milistim." If you put this Rambam together with Perek Zayin, which comes immediately before it, you get a whole picture. When you're inside the Mikdash, these are the actions that you're enjoined to do out of reverence to the Mikdash. And when you're outside of the Mikdash, what are you seeing with your eyes? You're seeing this Mishmar Kavod, which is a covenant of Mikdash. And that's the Shmiras Mikdash, this mitzvah, which the Rambam has established here. Now, let's turn to the next section of Halachas in the Rambam, and we get to Hilchas Klei Mikdash. And the Rambam dedicates the third parak of Hilchas Klei Mikdash to the Avodas Halevim. Says the Rambam, Perek Gimel Aluch Aleph, Zaro, Zera Levi Kulo Muvdol Avodas HaMikdash. Now we're talking about the Avoda that's incumbent upon the Leviim. U'mitzvah Saseh Lios HaLeviim Pnuyim U'muchanim LaAvodas HaMikdash. They have to be ready and prepared for the Avoda of the Mikdash. What is their Avoda? So the Rambam and Perek Gimel Aluch Beis Miklei Mikdash divides up their Avoda into two main categories. Number one, Avoda Shalem Shiyu Shomrim Es HaMikdash. Interesting. The Rambam Hilchos Beis HaMikdash Perek Ches quoted a pasuk that emphasizes the Kohen. And here, in Perek Gimel Hilchos Klei Mikdash, he's talking about Avodas HaLeviim Shiyu Shomrim Es HaMikdash. V'yu Mehen Sharim Liftach Shari HaMikdash U'Hagif Tal Soso. They unlock and lock the doors. And other Leviim, he says, you Misharim L'Shar Al HaKarbonos B'Chol Yom. So the Avodas HaLeviim splits into two parts. Number one, the Misharim, the Sharim, and number two, the Misharim. Is now, let's take a look at the Rambam's Lashonos. When he speaks about the mitzvahs asay of the Leviim in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, that's number Chav Gimel. And again, don't forget what the Rambam had said in Chav Ches about. In Chav Beis. So Chav Beis was the mitzvah of what? Of Lishmar Samigdash. Nitztavinu Lishmar Samigdash. Chav Gimel, Hatzivui Shenitztavu Aleviim. Kigon Ni'ila Sha'arim, etc. What's the difference in the Lashonos? When it comes to Shmiras HaMikdash, which we know has to be implemented by either the Leviim or even the Kohanim or part of it, the Ram says Nitztavinu. When he gets to the mitzvah of Ni'ilas HaSha'arim, etc., Hatzivui Shenitztavu Aleviim. Do you hear the difference in the Lashonos of the Rambam? Using the methodology, applying the lundus and the diuk in the Rambam of the Brisker Rav, it fits like a glove here too. Just like the Brisker Rav established a fundamental distinction between Akhtaris Akhtaris in the Rambam, which is a chiyuv imposed on the Kohanim as their avoda, as opposed to the Shar Karbonos, in which the Kohanim are representing Klal Yisrael. And it's Nitztavinu Kulanu as a tzibur. So too, I think you could say that there are two different dimensions of Shmiras Mikdash. One Shmiras Mikdash is, as we saw in Hilchas Beis HaBechira, an expression, an extension of Mora Mikdash, of the cover that we have for the Beis HaMikdash. And we set up this honor God, this God of honor, that circulates the Mikdash. That's number one. Here the Rambam used the term in Mitzvah Chav Beis, Nitztavinu. He doesn't point his finger to any particular segment of Klal Yisrael picking up a Chovas Gavra. Shmiras HaMikdash Mitzvah Saseh. Here in Klei Mikdash, he's dedicating the entire chapter, Perek Gimel, to the mitzvahs that are incumbent upon the Leviim. As the Rambam says, Hatzivui, Mitzvah Mitzvah, Nitztavu HaLeviim. Here we're talking about not a mitzvah of the tzibur, not a mitzvah of the mikdash, in which the Kohen and Leviim are just represented as the tzibur, but rather the personal obligation that evolves upon the Leviim. I would call it not a mitzvah of the two different mitzvahs. One mitzvah in Perek Ches Milchus Beis Hamechir is the mitzvah of Shmiras Hamigdash. Here, in Perek Gimel Hilchos Klei Hamigdash, the mitzvah is Avodas Halevim. One of the dimensions of Avodas Halevim is Shmiras Hamigdash. If this be the case, Rabotai, then now we can understand the two parshis. Remember, we asked the question, why two parshis? And the answer is that these two parshis are fundamentally different, one from the other, in the very nature of the chiyuv. Whereas the parshin Korach is addressed primarily to the Levim. Again, the Kohanim play, as we said, a secondary role. But this is part and parcel and essential to the definition of Avodas HaLevim. The Tzivu is incumbent upon whom? On the Levim, as their Avodah. And what's the goal of that mitzvah? Of Shmiras HaMikdash. Of Ne'ilah. And locking up the Mikdash. What's the goal?
Keeping out Tamei.
That's right, to keep out the Tmeim. Where does the Rambam codify that mitzvah? In Hilchos? Wait, give me a few minutes though, because I'm trying to develop it. You know, this is a lot of work. We'll see about it. But where does the Rambam codify the chiyuv of what I call the Avodas HaLevim, and Mikdash and its guarding is a subcategory, an offshoot of Avodas HaLevim, that's in Hilchos Klei Mikdash. But then there's a different parsha, and that's the parsha in Bamidbar Gimel, Atah V'achicho Banecha, meaning the Kohanim. Ah, that's a whole different mitzvah. The mitzvah of the Kohanim, and as the Gaon says, how many Kohanim do we require for this mitzvah? A minimum of three. That goes way beyond the confines of keeping out the unwanted, not letting the Zara or the Tavi come in. That's not the Shmiras Mikdash that we're talking about. The Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Ches, after codifying the mitzvah of Mora Mikdash, expands it to the mitzvah of Shmiras Mikdash. Here, says the Rambam, what's the goal of this mitzvah that appears in Bamidbar Gimel? Ein adome paltarin sheyeshal of shomrim. Lepalter and Shainal of Shomri. Is Rabosai, if this be the case, wait a minute, I'm riding a high now, you can't stop me. The Rambam says in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, Perek Gimel, the Rambam says, Halacha Zayin, who is a Levi for the mitzvah of Avodas HaLevim? Says the Rambam, he's got to be a Gadol. He can't be a Kut. Wait a minute. I don't get it. We just finished saying, and we saw the Mefarish in Talmud, that even the Rovim could take part in Shmiras HaMikdash. The Rambam classifies Shmiras HaMikdash as part of the Avodah of the Levim, and he insists that Levim, in order to be kosher for their Avodah, have to be Gdolim. That's black and white in the Rambam. What's the answer?
To the Shmiras.
Exactly. From the perspective of the mitzvah Migdash, in which the Kohanim are simply representing us, but the mitzvah is incumbent upon Klal Yisrael to defend and honor the Migdash, that's not a Chovas Gavra. That's not an obligation in the Maisa Shmir itself. That's an obligation to achieve a certain goal on behalf of Klal Yisrael.
So you're repeating the Minchas Chinuch.
No, it's different than the Minchas Chinuch. I'll tell you why. But let me just finish up for a second. In the case of Klei Mikdash, what the Rambam is talking about is Avodas HaLevim as a mitzvah Avodah incumbent upon the Levim. Well, when it's a mitzvah Avodah, then who's obligating the mitzvah Avodah? Only Gedolim, it can't be Ketanim. Interesting. The Mishnah in Tamid only mentions Kohen. The Mishnah in Tamid only mentions the source for the source for this mitzvah, the Gemara. I'm sorry, Abai only mentions which source for the mitzvah, Bamidbar Gimel, which is addressed to whom? To the Kohen. How many Kohen do we need? Three. Says the Gaon, we really only need one to keep out the Tmeim. The answer is we're not talking about keeping out the Tmeim. The Torah in this parsha is talking about Shmiras Mikdash as an honor for the Beis HaMikdash, Palter and Shomelech, that's the Rambam Hilchos Beis HaBechira. From this perspective, less than three just won't do it. And primarily, this is incumbent upon the Kohanim. The Mefarish says that even Ketanim can be part of that mitzvah. But lo and behold, when we turn to Masechta Midos, And I asked you why the Mishnah Midos repeats itself, but then it expands itself to include even the Levium. Here the Gemara says that it's got to be Levium Gedolim. And that's the Rambam Klei HaMikdash, because here we're talking about the Avodas HaLevium. If we're talking about Avodas HaLevium, then you need a Gadol. Of course, you'll ask me, if it's Avodas HaLevium, why are the Kohenim participating? I mean, after all, a Kohen who does the Avoda of a Levi is Chayv Misa for such a thing. He can't usurp the Avoda of Levium, just like a Zar can't do the Avoda of Kohenim, the Kohenim Azarim, with regard to the Avoda of Levium. So that's a question. But before we try to answer that question, I want to show you something that's very fascinating. The Rambam, which you'll see here, on page 2, but a little bit towards the bottom, the Rambam says, in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash, Mitzvah Saseh, Leo Salavim Pnuyim Umuchanim. And then, in the next paragraph, the Rambam in Hilchos Zayin says, Ein Bein Levi Nichlas Avodah Chiyagdil, V'yayish. But the question is, the Rambam accepts, at least according to all the Mepharshim, that a katan is included in the midst of Shavuos Mikdash based on this Rovim and the Mepharsh. But the answer is that the mitzvah of Masechta Tamid of the Rambam in Perek Ches, as we said before, is the mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash. It's not a mitzvah of Avodah. And therefore, in terms of Shmiras HaMikdash, even Ketanim could participate. Masha'en came the Shmiras HaLevim as part of the Avodas HaLevim, is then a Ketan is completely excluded. Now, here's a fascinating discussion on page 3. And that is, are the Kohanim allowed to sleep in the Beis HaMikdash? Mm-hmm. Now, I know that in Tzal, that's a really bad Aver if you're on Shmirah and you fall asleep. You know, you could get into deep trouble for that. Not that it ever happened to me, or frequently, or whatever. But the Rambam says in Hilchos Beis HaBechir, Perek Ches Halacha Vav, on the top of your page 3, Lo Yu Kohanim Ashomrim Yeshenim Bebigdei Kohuna. There was a whole way in which the Kohanim were able to sleep at night in the Beis HaMikdash. And which Kohanim is the Rambam talking about? It's just a Kohen looking for a place to sleep.
Shomrim, but not,
he called him the Shomrim because he means he's talking about the Shomrim, Eli.
That only some of them got it at a particular time.
Good. But he's talking about those who are in charge of the Shemira.
Yeah.
Says the Rambam, they could sleep. But how do they sleep? Do they sleep comfortably? You know, now they all the airlines are trying to outdo one the other. You know, how comfortable it is on a plane, and then you have the business class, and the dust class, and the ends class. You know, they have a whole house there that you could sleep in on a plane, right? So the Rambam says, don't get too comfortable. You're on Shmirah. Don't get too comfortable. What does the Rambam say? He says that they're allowed to sleep on the ground, but they're not allowed to sleep on a bed. No beds in the Beis HaMikdash. Now look at the Rambam's explanation for that halacha. He says, "V'yishenim ala aretz, kiderech kol shomrei chatzeros hamalachim, shelo yeshen ala mitos." The honor guard. The honor guard is also on duty 24/7. Well, they need some sleep. Ah, but they can't sleep in a bed. That would be distasteful, disrespectful to the malachim, to the king. But they're allowed to sleep. Wait a minute. The Mishnah Lamelech says, if you take a look in Midos, Abosai in Midos, I'm giving you a hint to the answer to the Mishnah Lamelech's kasha, in Midos, it says that there was an Ish. There was a particular individual who was called the Ish Harabais. That was his name. The Ish Harabais. What was his job? So it says here in Midos that he was in charge of the whole Harabais to make sure, to supervise, that no one fell asleep. And if he found a Levi that fell asleep, he would say Shalom Aleichem to him, and if he didn't respond, he knew he was really asleep, he would hit him over the head with a stick. I don't know, over the head, but anyway, he beat him pretty hard. And that's called Kol Ben Levi. There was a voice, a scream of a Ben Levi. And the shrieks of the Bnei, so what were these shrieks of the Bnei Levium? These were Levium who fell asleep and got hit. By whom? This is not Moshe hitting the stone. This is the Ish HaRabais hitting the Levium because they fell asleep on the job. Says the Mishnah Lamelech, how could the Rambam tell us that the Kohanim are allowed to go to sleep in the Beis HaMikdash, but they can't sleep on a bed? Where do they sleep? On the floor. By the way, if you've ever slept on a floor, you know it's not comfortable. In fact, it's very hard to sleep for many hours consecutively on the floor. Because what happens is when you sleep on the floor, first of all, your body's uncomfortable. Secondly, you hear every little ping and pong, you know, and you basically, in modern Hebrew, you'd say daruch. How do you say that in English? Leo daruch. You know, daruch is like when you pull the thing out, you know, so it's about to shoot off. Alright, anyway, daruch. It's what?
Cocked.
Cocked, okay, fine. So what it means is that if you're going to sleep in the Beis HaMikdash, but you're sleeping on the ground and not on a bed, you are ready to get up and defend and do what you have to do. So wait a minute. The Levim, Shteit Beferish, it says here, Midos, they're not allowed to fall asleep. So the Mishnah has his own sheet here, but the Tosis Yontif, on the Mishnayos and Midos, he says, you know what the difference is? Because there's a difference between Kohanim and Levim. And that's why Kol ben Levi is Dafka Kol ben Levi. The Levim couldn't sleep, but the Kohanim allowed to sleep. Rebbein Shalom, why? The Tosis Yontif doesn't give us a clue. Why is it that the Kohanim are allowed to sleep, and the Levim, Chas v'Shalom, if they sleep, they get beat up for it, blue in the face? What's the answer? Because they're two mitzvahs of Shmir. The mitzvah Shmir on the Levi is Avodas HaLevim, the goal of which is to make sure that no one who's unacceptable is allowed to enter into the Mikdash. That requires the Levi to be awake and to be Shomer, to fulfill his obligation constantly, without sleeping. However, the mitzvah that's incumbent upon the Kohanim is a totally different mitzvah. What's the goal of the mitzvah incumbent upon the Kohanim? It says, Kama, the Rambam says, Palterin Shel Melech. Says the Rambam, even in the Mishmar HaKavod of the Melech, even in the Shomrei Chatzeres HaMelachim, there's a derech in which they sleep. And that's considered part of the kiyum of the expression of Shomrei Chatzeres HaMelachim. They don't sleep on mitos. There's respect for the Palterin Shel Melech Chatzeres HaMelachim. But they are allowed to sleep.
I think we just saw something else also, that the Kohanim, the job of the honor guard is a 24-hour job, whereas the job of the Levim is probably only during the day.
Correct.
Because when you lock up, so you wouldn't have a group of people sleeping, kind of taking turns mishmaro during the night. So it makes sense that when Levi's there, he goes home to sleep.
By the way, why is it, Eli, that this Ish, this guy who supervised, I call him the Mashgiach, you know, why is the Mashgiach called the Ish Harabayis? The Mishnah in Talmud, when he speaks about the Kohanim, is talking about the Sha'arim of the Azara. But if you recall, we started with the Chiddush of Rameir Simcha L'Meshech Chachma, that there's a broader part that goes beyond the Azara, which also requires Shmira, and the Tmeim can't go in there. Those are the places that were primarily incumbent upon whom?
Levim.
On the Levim. Oh, within the context of Shmira Salavim, the Ish is the Ish Harabais. It's phenomenal to think that there was a person that was designated, that was his job, to supervise that people would not fall asleep on the job. And it's interesting because the pasuk says v'gisa b'yom v'layla, with regard to Talmud Torah, we find something very similar, that a person should really try to push himself and learn and continues until achay chatfenu shena, as the Gemara says. And in the yeshivas today, not all yeshivas, but many yeshivas have a person who goes around and makes sure people aren't sleeping, and he wakes them up, and eventually they get the message that they shouldn't be sleeping. Sometimes he gets rough on them. Again, I don't want to get into issues of legal questions about abuse and so forth and so on. But at least in the time of the Mikdash, this was accepted practice, and it was an Ish Harabayis, and he was Mechazer, and he went around. And if you heard the Kol Ben Levi, you understood what that Kol was. It was a Ben Levi who fell asleep on the job. Okay, Rabbi, so we're going to stop here just because there's a lot more to talk about, but. But we wanted to have Meirev. I just want to say that in Yitzhak Hashem we should be Zocha And I'm going to say this over and over again, to see the Mikdash reinstated and rebuilt in our time, and the mitzvah of Shmius Mikdash. We'll see later on that the Kohanim, even though their primary mitzvah was this Mishmar Kavod that we spoke about, a Paltun Shel Melech, but they too had another dimension. That's why they weren't usurping the Levi. They also included in Parashas Korach, in the midst of keeping out the Tmeim, and therefore, it doesn't surprise me that the Mishnah in Midos opens up and repeats once again the Shlosha Mekomo Shakonim Shomrim. This is not a repeat. Here the mitzvah of the Kohanim is an offshoot of the mitzvah of the Levim of keeping out the Zarakar of Yumos. In other words, the Kohen is also involved and responsible to keep out the Tmein. Here in Tamid, we're talking about the unique mitzvah of Shmiras HaMikdash from an entirely different parasha, as Abai points it out, not from the parasha of Korach, of keeping out the Tmeim, but the parasha of Moshe of the Aaron Ubanov. And we began the Shia by quoting the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvahs, and oddly the Rambam based himself on a Sifri Zutra, and he only quotes half of the Sifri Zutra, and not the other half. The answer is because he's talking about the mitzvah, not of the Levim, but the mitzvah in which the Kohanim is representative of Klal Yisrael, are in charge of Shmiras HaMikdash and Mora Migdash and Kavod HaMikdash. In that context, the Rambam says, Paltun Shel Melech. Not that he omits deliberately the second half of the Sifri Zuta about keeping out the Tmeim because he's not interested in that. He's not interested in this context, because in this context, he's focused on the mitzvah that's incumbent upon the Kohanim. And Nochinami, the Kohanim have another mitzvah, and that's that they're not usurping it from the Levim to guard the Migdash under the parasha of Korach, of Zara Korev Yumos, but that has nothing to do with Paltur and Shalom Melach.
Okay.